Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Gimel Lamed Aleph, three lines down, continuing to investigate all the times that the word Hakol is used in Shas, and understand what's the ribui from that use of the word Kol. So now we're up to Hakol Chayavim Bizimun. Everyone is Chayav in Zimun, Le'etuye Mai. What does that come to include? Le'etuye Nashim Va'avadim. Comes to include women and avadim, the Tanya. Ashim mizamnot la'atzman, v'avadim mizamnim la'atzman. Women can make their own zimun. Avadim can make their own zimun. Hakol mitzdarfim lezimun. Not only do we have kol chayavim bezimun, we have hakol mitzdarfim lezimun. Everyone's included in zimun. Letuye mai. Letuye katan hadiyodeya lemi bevarchim. To include a katan who understands to whom he is making the bracha. Da'amar Rav Nachman. Because of a member from Rav Nachman in the Gemara and Brachot, im yodeya lemi mivarchim, mizamnim alav. He knows to whom they are benching, then mizamnim alav, we make a zimun on this individual. So as far as the katan is concerned, there's a big mess about what exactly is the conclusion of the Gemara with regards to Katan. There are three possibilities about the conclusion of the Gemara there. There's one is dealing with three, one is dealing with a Zimun of 10, and one is dealing with Zimun at all. So the three possibilities of the conclusion of the Gemara there are that a Katan, a Yodel, a Mibavachim, one possibility is that he's Mitztarif to Asara for 10, the other possibility is that he's mitzdarif le shlosha to three, and the last possibility is not mitzdarif at all. The Rishonim have all of those permutations based on the conclusion of the Gemara over there. Again, it's somewhat unclear what the conclusion of the Gemara is, plus there's also a sugya, a couple daf before, that seems to be soter, the conclusion of the Gemara. So in reconciling that, the Rishonim come up with all those different positions. There, Tosafot also discusses the issue of minyan in general. Can a katana yodele meim varchim be included towards a minyan, not just towards benching? And they discuss that practice in Europe, in France at the time, what many people know as the famous Katan in Sefer Torah. All of those issues are discussed in the Tosafot with regards to this. Conclusion is for Ashkenazim that we do not include a Katan in Zimun. On the other hand, the Sfaradim do include a Katan Yodel Mivarchim towards a Zimun. With regards to women and Zimun, it's interesting over here, and Rashi points it out right away, Mizanmot Atzman, Shlosh nashim v'chein shlosha avadim. Three women or three slaves can make their own zimun. Aval ein shtei nashim u'shnei avadim mitztarfim im anashim. On the other hand, women and avadim cannot be mitztarev towards a men's zimun. Lefi sheyesh banashim mash'in b'nashim. Because men have something over women. Uvavadim. Shein anashim amrod brit. Because when it comes to one of the requirements of benching, we say this in Noga Decha, al britcha shechatamta bivsareinu, and al eretz tova rechava shratzita v'inchalta lavoteinu. And avadim can't say al nachlateinu, can't speak al nachlateinu. So they have a deficit with regards to, or in comparison to men, and therefore they can't join the zimun of men. So the way Rashi lays it out over here, first assumption of Rashi is that women and avadim have the same chiyuv as men, meaning that they're both deoraita. There is a machloket, it's not clear that in the Gemara in Brachot, as to whether women really do have a chiyuv mideraita, they may only have a chiyuv midrabanan. But from Rashi here, it seems clear that he thinks they're on the same playing field. The only problem is that they don't say brit. The only problem is they don't say al nachlatenu. Therefore, they have some sort of subpar chiyuv. But nevertheless, other than that, or had it not been for that, they would have been able to be motziach ad sheni, which is interesting in itself that the Rashi paskens that way. But Rashi clearly says that they have to be a zimun on their own, the avadim are on their own, and anashim are on their own. The Tosafot quotes this Rashi and says about the zimun of women, mitzarech lomar, the reshut hu anashim lezamein, that it's optional if they want to make a zimun or not. But there's no obligation to make a zimun when they have three women. Here he has it in shorthand. He has it much more extensively in Brachot. It says, on this, our men are sumech not to, or sumchot, not to make a mizumun, because it's only a reshut, it's not a chiyuv. Tosafot in Brachot also brings another reason, which is not pleasant, but a reality for women back in the time of Tosafot, was that the women didn't understand Hebrew, and therefore they were inappropriate to make a zimun or count them in a zimun, because They just weren't educated. They didn't know Hebrew. They only knew the colloquial spoken language, the language of wherever they were living, but they didn't necessarily have education with regards to Hebrew. And therefore, the women didn't understand what was going on. And we had that yesterday with regards to Megillah. We had the Megillah. The Gemara talks about the fact that Nashim and Amei Aretz can be Yotze Megillah, even though they don't understand what's being read, as long as it's read in the Lashon HaKodesh. But again, you see this idea that they didn't understand Lashon HaKodesh. The Tosafot brings that down. Again, here we have Machloket HaRishonim with regards to a woman Zimun. What's the status? There are Rishonim who believe that it's a Chiyuv Mukhlat. If there are three women there, they should and are obligated to make a Mizuman. There are others that think it's a Rishut, like we see here in Tosafot. It's optional. If they want, they can make a Mizuman. They're not obligated to make a Mizuman. And there are others that say that they shouldn't make a Mizuman. And that is, like the Tosafot explains in Brachot, where they don't really don't know what they're doing, they don't know Lashon HaKodesh, therefore they shouldn't make a Zimun. That's with regards to the Zimun and the obligation of the women towards Zimun. In terms of being mitzdareif towards a Zimun, here you see Rashi clearly saying that they cannot be mitzdareif towards a Zimun. Many of the Rishonim mentioned that if there is a Zimun of men, that the women shouldn't break off and make their own Zimun, but rather they should be mitzdareif. I mean, listen to the men Zimun and join in with that Zimun. There are others that indicate that they have the right to break off anyway, but most believe that they should join in with the main Zimun of the men. There are some unusual shittot there, including the Mordechai and others who suggest that when it comes to Zimun, the problem of joining women to the Zimun is a problem of pritzut, it's a problem of it being inappropriate, but that's only true when you're talking about outside women. But if you're talking within the family, that would be fine. And therefore, they were mitzdarif to the Zimun, wives and daughters, because there is no problem there of pritzut, and that they're qualified to be a part of the Zimun, even the Zimun of men. And therefore, they would include women as part of their Zimun, their family, women, wives and children, as long as no other women or outside men involved with the Zimun. The last thing is, and this again, most Rishonim believe that women do not, or are not mitzdarif to the Zimun Asara. They don't make up the 10 for the Zimun. Again, it would relate to this idea of whether you can include them for the Zimun. Is it a problem, like Rashi says, a fundamental problem, so therefore you would assume that by 10 cannot include them? Or is it just a problem like something like Pritzut, or so on and so forth, where they still could be included, maybe even for a Zimun of 3, but probably for a Zimun of 10 especially, where if it's family, maybe they can be counted towards the Zimun of Asara, according to those Rishonim that believe they can be mitzdareif. So you really have a large number of opinions with regard to this. Our practice is that women do not count towards the Zimun, that women can make their own Zimun if they have three women together. But again, if there is a men's Zimun already, then they shouldn't break away in order to make their own Zimun, because of all those opinions that believe that the men's Zimun might be a Deoraita level, might be of some sort of higher level, and they can definitely join in. But they should answer, and that's very appropriate, that women should make sure to be a part of the Zimun. I mean, that they're equally obligated then, once there is a main Zimun, to be a part of the Zimun and not to just say, oh, I'm not part of the Zimun, therefore I shouldn't be there. But they should answer the Zimun and they should be a part of the Zimun when they bench. All right, next case is Akol Mitamim B'Ziva. Everyone can become Tamei with Ziva, Zav. Letuye Mai, Letuye Tuhinok Ben Yomo. It comes to include even a child a day old. Tanya, Ish. Matamudomar, Ish, Ish. When it comes to the beginning of the parsha of Zav, Ish, Ish, Kiye, Zav, Mibsaro, Ish, Ish, Lerabot, Tinok, Ben Yom Echad. The double Lashon of Ish comes to include even a child of a day old. Shemetamei B'ziva, Divi Rabbi Yehuda. Here we small, but no, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broko, Mary, no Tzarif. You don't need that limud. Rayo Mer, Vazav, Et Zovo, Ola Zachar, Nekeva. Zachar Koshu, Zachar, Ben Katan, Ben Gadol. It says, Hazav, Et Zovo, Ola Zachar, Unekeva. The Zachar is not qualified. It means any Zachar. Zachar means either young, even old. Nekeva, Koshi. Again, Nekeva is not qualified over here. Any female would qualify. Nekeva, Ben Katana, Ben Gdola. Im Kain, Matam, Adomer, Ish, Ish. So then what's the Ish, Ish teach you if you don't need it? Dibrei Torah, Lashon Bnei Adam. That was a standard expression. Ish Ish is just the prose, the poetic license of the Torah, and it's not meaningful in terms of learning something from it. So next one is, Akol Mitamim Mitamei Meit. Everyone become Tamei with Tumata Meit. Letuye Ma'ai, Letuye Katan comes to include a Katan. Sakadat Chamina, I would have thought, because it says Ish Asher Yitma'a V'lo Yitkata, that a person who becomes Tamei and does not become Tahor, and then engages with Kodesh, or enters the Mikdash, they will be Chayav, Karet, Ish in katan lo. I would have thought that it only applies to men, not to minors. Kamash malan, that's not true, because it says, bala nafshot ashira yusham. Because it says nafshot. Nafshot being anyone, any living being. Ela ish limute mai. So then, if that's true, then what is the ish emiut for? Limute katan mikaret. Comes to exclude the katan from karet. Meaning that a katan can become tamei, but he will not be punished with regards to that tumah. So he'll have impact in terms of passing on tumah, spreading tumah, but he won't be punished for that tumah. Again, if he engages with kodesh, enters into the mikdash, whenever the restrictions that would lead him to a chiyuv karet, he will not be held liable, he will not be punished with karet for that. Exactly, so Tosafot asks your question. Where else do we see that a minor gets punished? Why do I need to hear a specific pasuk to tell me he's not getting punished? No katan gets punished. That's the nature of being a minor. A minor is that you're not held liable for your actions. So why should it be over here that I need a specific pasuk? So he says, possibly, v'shema itzrich over here, l'tzach adat chamina hov nitrabe l'tuma itchayev karet, k'mash mulan d'lo. Because we do have a ribu in the pasuk that includes him from the tuma. So once he's included in the Tumah, maybe he's included in the whole Parsha. So I need something specific to come and eliminate from it. He says, Shema, I think it's not a strong answer. Next case is, Akol mitamim benigayim. Anybody can kutamei with Tzorat. Letuye mai. Letuye katan. Comes to include a minor. Sakatat chamin. I would have thought it says, Ish tzarua k'tiv ish in katan lo. Kamash malan, that not. It says, what do you mean? Kamash malan what? Why not? Because it says, Adam kiyev ba'or b'saro. Mikol makom. It uses the term Adam when it talks about kiyev or b'saro. When it talks about nigaim, it starts out the parsha with Adam. Adam is the more generic form. And therefore, that would include minors rather than ish. So if that's the case, ve'ale ish lamali, then what's the ish come to exclude? Gatanya. For the bright, the ish, en li'ale ish, isha minayin. Ish seems to limit the parsha of Tzorah to men and not to women. How do I know that a woman is also included in Parshat Tzorat? Because you omer, v'hatzarua. Hatzarua seems to include another individual. Harei kan, shnayim. That means that there's two individuals included. Imkein, matam olamrei ish. If that's the case, that we're going to include women in the end anyway, then what's the ish come to teach us? Inyan shomata. Comes to teach us about the Parsha below. The Parsha below is what a mitzora must do. And that is, ish poreya uforeim. Then a mitzora has to rend his garments. He has to be unkempt, let his hair grow out. That's parua, pureim, the ripped garments. Ve'en asha purat uforemet. But a woman does not have that requirement. A woman who is a mitzorat does not have the requirement of purat uforemet. And that is because of the word ish. Ish limits those particular issues to men and not to women. And therefore, they do not have to practice priam prima, the women, because of this exclusion of ish. And those that ask the basic question that the Gemara usually asks, which is, why did you do it the opposite? You could have read the whole parsha the opposite way around, which is that the riboy is for isha, and the miut is for a katan. And therefore it would be a katan that is excluded from priya and prima, and not an isha. So Tosafot in the end says, v'yesh lomar dimistavra limute priya prima misha. Makes more sense to exclude a woman from priya prima, she gnai huzeh. Because it's inappropriate. It's not proper for a woman to have her hair be uncovered, unkempt, to have her clothes be ripped. That's something that is not improper keeping of tzniut. And therefore, he says it makes more sense to say the woman's excluded than to say that the katan is excluded. Now, kol ro'im et nigayim. Anybody can look at nigayim to paskin with regards to nigayim. Hakol ksherim lirot et nigayim. Anyone can see them. Letuye mai, letuye she'eno baki bahen. Even though he's not a baki, ubish motehem. He doesn't know about Nigayim. So here we're talking about the Kohen. The Kohen is the one who must paskin, whether it's Tohor or Tameh with regards to the Nega. Here, a Kohen who doesn't know what he's talking about, he's allowed to paskin. It says, V'amamari, Eino baki v'hen u'shmotehem, Eino ro'et Nigayim. Pretty straightforward. We bring a memra, but we don't need the memra. We should have known it logically. That if he doesn't know what he's talking about, how can he give up psak about Tameh and Tohor? So I'm Ravina Lokasha, ha, demisabri lebisovar, ha, demisabri lebisovar. Depends on whether he's a quick learner or not. We know from the Gemara in Shavuot that you can have a Talmud Chacham Yisrael come, look at the nega, and then tell the Kohen what to say. Look, Mr. Kohen, please say that this is Tameh. Mr. Kohen, please say this is Tahor. Because it's the member of the Kohen that determines if it's Tameh or Tahor. But the brains behind it, the advisory role, can be played by Yisrael Tamid Chochom. So here the Gemara explains that even the Kohen who paskins Tameh and Tahor, he can't be clueless. It has to be that the Chochom who looks at it and is his advisor then explains to him what he's seeing. And he has to grasp it. If he grasps it, then he can be the one who's posek. He can be the one who says Tameh Tahor. If he doesn't grasp it, then he's under that restriction of Amar, Inu Baki Be'am Shvotim, Inu Re'eta Nigayim, then he's not allowed to see the Nigayim. So he has to give the psak, but he can't be clueless. He has to get the information, understand the information, and then paskin. Hakol Kshirim Lekadesh. Everyone is kashir to be Mekadesh. This is the Mai Chatat for being Metaher. From the Paraduma, Latuye Mai, or Bihuda, Latuye Katan. According to Bihuda, it's to include a Katan, Rabbanan, Latuye Isha. The Rabbanan, it's to include a woman. Tetanan, Akok Shirim Lekadesh, Chutz, Micher Shoteve Katan. Excluding a Cher Shoteve Katan, Rabbi Yehuda Makshir Be Katan. Rabbi Yehuda says a Katan is included. Posel Bisha, Umandruganus. And he excludes a woman and an Odruganus. So therefore, Akol, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would become to include the Katan, because he excludes an Isha. And for the Chachamim, a kol would come to include an Isha, not a Katan, because they think a Katan is excluded with Cheresh Otev Katan, but they don't think an Isha is excluded from the Kiddush HaMayim. That's a machloket in the Gemara in Yoma. We're not going to get into all the details between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan as to why their positions are to exclude a Katan or Isha. Next is, HaKol Ksherim Hazot. Everyone is kasher to do Azat HaMayim, Latui Mai, Latui Arel. Who could the Rebbe Lazar Damar was? Arel Shiza Zato Kashira. Arel here is someone here who doesn't have a Brit Milah because his brothers died because they had a Brit Milah. Therefore, because of the danger, he doesn't have a Brit Milah. He's nevertheless, he's allowed to perform the Haza'ah, and it's Kshira. If he does perform it, we learn that out as a Kal V'chomer from Tvul Yom. Because Tvul Yom is allowed to perform the Tara that is associated with Parah Duma. And even though Tvul Yom is Pasul B'Truma, nevertheless, he's Kasher B'Parah. So to an Arel, who is Pasol B'Truma, Pasol and Kochim, nevertheless, he will be allowed to perform the Haza'ah. And therefore, we include an Arel as one of those individuals that can, or Kohanim, that can perform the Haza'ah. Kol Shochatim. So Kol Shochatim, we did this in Chulin. We had this twice in Chulin, the word Kol Shochatim, Latuye Mai. Chada Latuye Kuti. One comes to include a Kuti. And Chada Latuye Yisrael Mumar. And the other one to include an Yisrael Mumar. We did, when we were in Chulin, we spoke about this a lot. What is the situation in which Nisro, Mumar, and Kuti are believed or allowed to be used? Kuti, you might have to feed him from his own food to see that he does not violation of the issue of Lifnei Iver. But Yisrael Mumar might have to be when someone's Omeid al-Gabav, that someone's standing over him in order to ensure that he's doing it properly. Whatever the cases may be, as we learned in Chulin, there is the inclusion of Kuti and Yisrael Mumar. Kol Malim L'Eretz Yisrael, Mishnah at the end of Ketubot, that anyone can come up to Eretz Yisrael, Latuye Mai. So it comes to include Latuye Avadim. It comes to include even Avadim can make such a demand. As Rashi says, Sh'im Yesh Lo Eved Kanani Mahul, as an Eved Kanani who's had a Brit Milah, then he wants to Limkor, he has to sell it. Ratzai Eved Shalol Yimkoren Ela Be'Eretz Yisrael. And the Eved says, I only want you to sell me into Eretz Yisrael. He's up for trade. And he says, I only want to be traded to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to be traded anywhere else. He has the right to make such a demand. Tosafot over here quotes Rashi from Ketubot, that Rashi in Ketubot gives a different understanding of what it means, Latui Avadim, which is Ketubot, Peres Rashi, Shechol Aloto, Eved Ivri, Bar Kocho, Shel Eved. You can take up the Eved against his will, meaning that the Balim, if they go up to Eretz Yisrael, the Eved does not have a right to go free just because you're going to Eretz Yisrael. You can compel the Eved to join you and go up to Eretz Yisrael. You have a third opinion, which is Reperish, She'eved Yechol Akuf La'loto O Yifteruah. The other way around, that the Eved is given the right to say, I want to go up to Eretz Yisrael or free me. One of two choices. So you have three different possibilities of what Latuye Avadim means. Latuye Avadim means to include them in the requirement to go with the Balim to Eretz Yisrael. They must go along with them and they can't opt out. The other one is the Riu, who says they have a right to demand to go to Eretz Yisrael. If they want to opt out, then they can be freed. If the Balim don't want to take them there, they can be freed. And the last one is Rashi over here, who says it's all about a sale. That if he's going to sell them anyway, he can demand that he be sold to Eretz Yisrael and not to anywhere else. And the one who has Avadim explicitly mentioned there, then it comes to include a case where even when you're moving from somewhere nicer to somewhere of a poorer aesthetic quality or poor amenities, that you can still go up to Eretz Yisrael, you still can force them to go up to Eretz Yisrael. And that, as Rashi points out over here, is why Marishto. He can force his wife to come with him to Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to see in a second, even in Eretz Yisrael, up to Yerushalayim, even if it's a downgrade in their living quality. And that's what the Gemara says about the next one. And not anybody can motzi, you can't take them out of Eretz Yisrael. That comes to include a case where an Eved ran away to Eretz Yisrael. Can't force him to go back to his position in slavery in Chutz La'aretz. As Tosfot explains that we would think that because he ran away, there'll be a knas that he has to go back to his balim. What we're told over here is that that knas is waived because he's in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore his right to stay in Eretz Yisrael allows us to waive the knas of returning to his balim. Tosfot also brings another case where it's possible that this is a Eved where his balim traveled to Eretz Yisrael on a regular basis. Therefore, he can demand that he stays in Eretz Yisrael and works out of Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, we're talking about an Eved Kani over here, the way Rashi explained the first part here, that we're talking about an Eved Kani. If you explained, like Rashi and Tubot, that the first part is talking about an Eved Ivri, then we'd be talking, obviously, about an Eved Ivri in this case as well. Kol Malim Li Yerushalayim, that same Mishnah and Tubot, that anybody can force you to go up to Yerushalayim, Latuyim Manave Yafeh Lenave Ra'ah. It comes to include a case where you're downgrading your quality of living. You still can demand that you move up to Yerushalayim. Now again, this is with a woman. And you can't force someone out of Yerushalayim, even if it's an upgrade in the living quality or living standard, you can't demand that they leave Yerushalayim. So Tosafot points out over here, why don't we say Avadim over here again? Avadim only have one distinction, that's between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. Within Eretz Yisrael, they do not have another upgrade, which is between the rest of Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. That's only applicable by a woman, by a married couple, where the husband or the wife can force the other party to move to Yerushalayim, even when they're Eretz Yisrael, even when it's a downgrade in the living standards. Or the other way around, they cannot force them to leave Yerushalayim, even if it will mean that it's an upgrade in the living quality or living standards. Now the Gemara moves on to another framework or phrase that is used throughout Mishnayot. Over here we started with the word akol, and then we tried to determine what the ribui was anytime it's used akol. Now the Gemara is going to discuss another phrase that appears in many Mishnayot, which is Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim. Obviously we're discussing it here because it's in our Mishnah as well. But we'll say something. Everybody's chayav in a mitzvah, and then the Mishnah will list Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim. Why would you just say akol chayavim? Why do you say Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim? So the Gemara is going to find in each of these cases a reason to believe that one of those parties should have been patur, and therefore it needs to include that party, because otherwise you would have thought that they should not be chayav. Kol chayavim sukkah, kohanim levim Yisraelim pshito. Who else is going to be chayav in sukkah? If it's not kohanim Yisraelim levim, then who is chayav in sukkah? So the Gemara says, I ani lo mechayve, man mechayve. Kohanim itzrichale, we need the kohanim. Sakadat chamin oil viktiv, because it says, vaitzukot, besukot teshvu. That you have to live in the sukkah the way you would live in your house. Madira. Now there's some question as to the girsa over here, whether ish v'ishto belongs in the girsa. I'll read it with it, and we can read it without it afterwards. Madira ish v'ishto. Just like when one lives in their house, it's husband and wife together. Av sukkah ish v'ishto, so too, sukkah is ish v'ishto. That's one possibility of reading it. The other, svarim acherim, you can see it in the Masoret Tashatz, the Shittim Mekubetz, it also has a girsa like this. Which is, ma, that when you teshvu, ben bayom, ben belailu, you live there day and night. Av sukkah, ben bayom, ben belailu. Also too, by sukkah, it should be day and night. So the question of the limud over here is whether it's ish v'ishto or day and night, actually makes a difference now as to what happens. V'hari kohanim, ho b'nei avudaninu. The kohanim have to work in the mikdash during sukkot. Lo lechayvu, I would think they're not chayav in sukkah. Kamashvalan, he did the piti revishat avudah, even though they might be patur when they're doing avudah. But zloshat avudah, when they're not doing avudah, chiyuve mechayev, then they should be chayav. Midava hochei drachim, they're no different than wayfarers, travelers. Damamar hochei drachim miyom, patur min asukah. As long as they're traveling, they're patur min asukah. Vichayavim balale, but when they come to the place where they're going to reside for the night, the chayav in sukkah, because the mitzvah for the hochei drachim then is no longer an impediment to their being mechayev in the mitzvah sukkah. So the same thing by the Kohanim. Question is, what's the limud? If you say the limud here is ish v'ishto, The problem for the Kohen over here is that because he's doing Avodah, he can't be together with his wife at night. If he's together with his wife at night, he'll be Tamei Tumat Keri, and then he will not be able to perform the Avodah the next day in the Mikdash. Since he's a Baal Avodah, and we would have thought the requirement by Sukkah is that he should be able to live with his wife, and here he cannot live with his wife, so maybe he should be Patur from the Mitzvah of Sukkah. The Gemara answers, that's only Be'idan Avodah. That's only if he is one of those Kohanim that is performing Avodah. If he's a Kohen that's not performing Avodah, he does not have that problem. He doesn't have that problem. He's going to be Chayav in Sukkah. That would be the way to learn it if you think the limud is Ish Vishto. If you think the limud is Yom Velaylo, then what it is a Kohen during the day is required to be in the Mikdash. He is a Baal Avodah. He has a requirement to be in the Mikdash. Therefore, he cannot perform the Mitzvah Sukkah during the day because he is sequestered to do Avodah in the Mikdash. So I would have thought he's also Patur because he can't perform Sukkah Yom and Laila. He can only do it at night. The answer is, that's only Bidan Avodah. During the day when he's working, yes, he's Patur Misukkah. At night, when he comes home, he's Chayav in Sukkah. Just like the Hulchei Drachim. Over there, the Hulchei Drachim seems to make more sense. Just like the Hulchei Drachim are Patur during the day, Chayav at night. So too, the Kohen is only Patur during the day while he's in the midst of Avodah. But he would be Chayav at night when he returns home. So depending on what you think the Limud is, will have an outcome as to when the Kohen is Chayav. If you think the limud is Ish Vishto, then a Kohen, as long as he's in Avodah, is Patur Misukkah day and night. It's only when he's not performing Avodah that he would be Chayav. On the other hand, if you think that the Patur here has to do with day and night, then he's Patur as long as he's doing Avodah during the day. At night, where there is no Avodah, he would not be Patur, he'd be Chayav in the mitzvah of Sukkah. The other thing is that if it's Hochei Drachim, like for instance, if you go on a Tiyul in Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you're not Patur Misukkah because you're a Holei Derech. Because there it's optional. You didn't have to go take the tiyul. It's only when you're compelled to do it, then do we say that you're patur. The question is, what's compelling you to do it? If it's compelling you to do it because of parnasa, or is it compelling you to do it because of mitzvah? Right. There are. I'm not disagreeing with you. There are, the Rishonim argue about whether it's mitzvah or not mitzvah. For business reasons, there are those that believe that when it comes to work, if you're at work, that you would not be chayav in sukkah. We're machmir not to do that, and we generally don't eat outside the sukkah, even when someone is on traveling or for business. Alright, now, kol chayavim b'tzitzit, kohanim levim v'yisraelim, everyone's chayavim tzitzit, kohen levi yisrael, pshita, again. Why would you think otherwise? I don't know whether you have the girsa here as well, as if they are not chayav, who is chayavim tzitzit? So kohanim mitzrichalei, we do need kohanim, sakadat kamina oviktiv, lotu bashatneiz, gedilim tasalacha. There is a juxtaposition, a hekesh between the isur of kilayim, and the mitzvah to put on tzitzit. Man delo yishtari kilayim legabei, the one who is not permitted to wear kilayim, then, v'levisha, who the mechayev mitzvah tzitzit, that person is chayev and tzitzit. V'ani kohanim hov yishtari kilayim legabayu, with kohanim, they are mutar in kilayim, because the big day kuhuna have kilayim in them. The big day kuhuna with the avnet, the belt that they wear, the avnet is made out of shesh and tchelet. And therefore it involves kilayim. And since it involves kilayim, therefore they would be possibly precluded or not chayav in the mitzvah tzitzit because they're wearing kilayim. The Gemara says, Kamash Valan, he di ishtari bi'idan avodah. When are they mutar in kilayim when they're doing avodah? Below idan avodah, lo ishtari. When they're not doing avodah, they're not mutar in kilayim, and therefore they're going to be chayav in tzitzit. Now what it means, di ishtari bi'idan avodah, is actually a machloket. Most people would explain this, which is literally, when they're doing avodah, they can wear the big day kuhuna, and they're not in violation of kilayim. As soon as they're finished with the avodah, they can't wear the big day kuhuna, because they can't wear kilayim, shelo b'makom mitzvah. And therefore, they have to strip off their bigadim, and not to wear kilayim, they be chayav tzitzit. The Rabbeinu Tam, in a number of places, it's not here, but the Rabbeinu Tam in other places, says that he doesn't think that's right. He thinks that the ishtari bidan avodah doesn't literally mean while they're doing avodah. It means as long as they're wearing the big day kuhuna. The kohen is permitted to wear the big day kuhuna even outside of the context of avodah. And because of that, they're still not chayav in kilayim. Right. They're not chayav in kilayim, so they also will not be chayav in tzitzit. So the two are correlated. But the fact they're not chayav in kilayim even outside the context of avodah. Because he says, once you get a tour from kilayim, the patur exists as long as you're wearing the beged. If you put on a beged because it's big day kuhuna to do avodah and you're patur mikilayim, that remains in effect. You don't have to then strip the beged off as soon as right you're finished the avodah. And he says the same thing to gabei tzitzit. He says if a beged is patur mitzitzit, then if all of a sudden you come into a period where it would be chayav and tzitzit, you don't have to all of a sudden put tzitzit on the beged. The beged remains with that tour, that the time that you put on the beged. It remains patur mitzitzit. So that idea is that it's more expansive. The possibility is the reason for that might be it's related to how the begadim interact with the kohen. And that is that the Mara and other places say that a kohen who does not wear bigdei kuna is the equivalent of a zar. Bismach bigdei malehem, kunatam alehem. When they're wearing their begadim, they are kohanim. When they're not wearing their begadim, they are not kohanim. So that they turn into a zar when they're not wearing their begad. Therefore, bigdei kuna might have a broader context than the avoda itself. It might be that the shem kuhuna that is given to them through the bigdei kuhuna. And that might help explain the Rabbeinu Tam Shita as to why there is a broader context in which they're allowed to wear the bigdei kuhuna, not just at b'idan avoda, exactly at the time they're doing avoda. Alright, akol chayavim b'tfilin, kohanim levim yisraelim, same thing by tfilin, pshita. No, again, kohanim yitzrich le'isach, adamit amino ho v'ktiv k'shartim le'ot al yadecha ve'lo tutofo b'neinecha, so that you have to put on tefillin of yad and tefillin shirosh. Kol di'itei b'mitzvah di'yad, di'itei b'mitzvah di'rosh. Anybody who puts on tefillin shiyad, then can put on tefillin shirosh. Ve'arni kohanim ho v'letne ho b'mitzvah di'yad. Kohanim, don't wear tefillin shil yad. Dichtiv, yubash al b'saro. And when it comes to the big day kuna, they must be worn directly on the skin. There can be nothing that is a chatzitza ben the big day kuna and the flesh, the skin of the kohanim. So therefore, the tefillin shel yad, which are vayula ot al yadcha, v'lehem ot lecha v'lo ot lecherim, they're an ot for you and not for others. The tefillin shel yad have to be put directly on the skin as well, directly on the flesh, and under your sleeve. Well, if you do that, you're going to have something that's chotzeitz between the big day kuna and the kohen. So therefore, kohanim do not wear tefillin shel yad. Therefore, I would have thought that's also a patur for them not to wear tefillin shel rosh. So, ema v'mitzvah rosh nami lo lechayve, k'mash v'lan, t'lo makve ha'dodi. That comes to teach us that the tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh are independent mitzvot, and therefore, even if you don't perform yad, you still perform rosh. K'ditnan, tefillin shel yad, enema kevet shel rosh, v'shel rosh, enema kevet shel yad. That there's no equal between the rosh and yad, you can put them on independently. Why is the tefillin shel yad only a problem for them? Why isn't the tefillin for shel rosh face the same challenge? Because when it comes to the head of the kohen, sometimes he has to wear the hat of the kohen, the mitznefet, as part of the big day kuna. So why does then that prevent them from the ability to put on tefillin shel rosh? That we don't have a problem because tano se'aro aya nireh ben tzitz lemitznefet. The mitznefet does not take up the entirety of the head of the kohen. His hair, it shows up between the tzitz and the mitznefet. So when it comes to the kohen gadol, here we're talking about the mitznefet, which is the head of the kohen gadol, the mikbat is the head for the kohen hedjot. They both have the same requirement to be placed on the head. Nevertheless, we see from the kohen gadol that the mitznefet does not cover his entire head. The tzitz goes on his forehead. The mitznefet goes on the top of his head. Breita says over here is that se'aro, his hair was visible between the end of the tzitz, meaning at the top of the tzitz at his forehead, and the beginning of the mitznefet. Exactly the place where you need to put on tefillin. The makom she'rosh tinok rofes, the soft spot on the top of the head of the tinok, that's exactly where his hair is visible, that's the location that's visible between the tzitz and the mitznefet. And guess what he did with that? Shisham Eneach Tefillin. That's where he put on it. Tefillin Shel Rosh. So therefore there is, despite the fact that there's a requirement that the mitznefet be directly on his head, there's still placement or place for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, which is not true of the Tefillin Shel Yad. Hakol chayavim b'tkiyat shofar. Everyone's chayavim b'tkiyat shofar. Kohanim levim yisraelim pshita. Again, kohanim itztrichle. Kohanim, we need them. Sagadat chavu v'ktiv yom truma yelechem. That Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Teruah Lachem. Sounds like it's a unique day. Mandalay Telev B'Tkiyat Dechad Yoma. Someone who only has Tkiyot once a year, Chayav. V'ani Kohenim Ho V'itnu B'Tkiyat Kulei Shata. They hear the shofar all year round. Tichtiv. Tchate B'Chatzotzrot Alotechem. That they have to blow the Chatzotzrot, the trumpets, over the Karbanot. Emelo L'Chayvo. Maybe they shouldn't be Chayav on the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Where it says the obvious question, me dummy. Talking about different things. One place we're talking about tkiyat shofar, one place we're talking about the chatzotzrot. Why should one matter for the other? Midami, altum chatzotzrot, alcha shofar. It's struck. I still need it. Sakodat chamino hoil. Vitzan shaveh hayovel to Rosh Hashanah, litzkiyahu brachot. That we say that when it comes to the year of the Ovel, and the year of the Ovel on Yom HaKippurim, they did the same thing of the blowing the shofar and the brachot They did Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofarot, the whole davening that we do on Rosh Hashanah, they did on Yom HaKippurim as well when it was the year of the Yovel. De'ita b'mitzvat Yovel, ita b'mitzvat Rosh Hashanah. Someone who Yovel is relevant for will also have the mitzvah of Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Someone to whom Yovel is not relevant, therefore they will not have the mitzvah of blowing Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Ha'ani k'lani, hol v'litnu b'mitzvat Yovel. They're not including mitzvah Yovel. D'tanan, we have a Mishnah, k'onim, v'levi'im, mochrim le'olam, v'go alim le'olam. They can sell forever, and they can redeem forever. So, ema b'mitzvah Rosh Hashanah, olam enoli chayvei. They should also not be chayav in Rosh Hashanah, k'mash malon. Ne'id le'nehu b'shmatat karka. Even though they don't have a din in the shmita of the karka of the Yovel, b'shmatat k'safim, mishluach abadim, mi'ahitnehu. When it comes to Shemitah of Ksafim and Shiluch Abadim, which are relevant by the Yovel, they do have. I'm going to come back to a lot of questions about this. Let's start with the first question, which is, what does it mean that Kohanim Levim can sell forever and can redeem it forever? We'll go with Rashi's Pshat at first. Rashi says, what does it mean, Mochrim Le'olam? That they can sell, according to Rashi, even Bishnat HaYovel. Normally, one is not permitted to sell during the Yovel, because it's basically a Kal V'Chomer. When you sold before the Yovel, you'll get it returned on the Yovel. Certainly if you sold on the Yovel itself, you should get it back on the Yovel. So therefore, you're not allowed to sell land on the Yovel, or if you do sell it, it doesn't work. The guy keeps the money and you get your land back. So, Kohanim are exempted from that. That's what Rashi says. What it means, Mukhrim li'olam. Goalim li'olam, he says, is, in Makrus day, goalim oto miyad. That if they sold a field, they have the right to redeem the field immediately. Normally, when you sell a field, Israel sells a field, you have to wait a minimum of shnei tvuot. It's a minimum of 2 years worth of crops, in order to redeem the field. There's a minimum amount that has to stay with the buyer of 2 years. That minimum is waived by a kohen. By kohenim and levim, they can buy back the field, they can redeem the field immediately. They do not have to wait the 2 year waiting period. That's the way Rashi learns what it means, mokrim d'olam and golim d'olam. Tosafot brings down an alternative that this is speaking about batei arei choma. Kamisani is speaking about houses in walled cities. The normal rule is that if you sell a house in a walled city, you have 1 year, yamim tehei gulato, you have 1 year to redeem the house. If you don't redeem the house within that 1 year, it's chalut. It's a permanent sale and does not come back on the Yovel. Who's exempted from that? Kohanim and Levim. The Kohanim and Levim are never mochrim litzmitut. They never sell forever. Even with batei arei choma, they have the right to redeem that house that they sold in batei arei choma forever. So then the suggestion would be that mochrim le'olam and golim le'olam is relevant to that batei arei choma. You could say it means that golim le'olam means that they always have the right to buy back their house in batei arei choma. And as Tosafot says, then agav, they bought down that they're mochrim le'olam. They can always sell. They can always sell the house in batei arei choma because they're not affected by the Yovel. So they're not affected by the Yovel, they can always sell it, because they can always get it back. That would be the limud here. The other question that you have to ask is, with regards to Shmitat Ksafim. Shmitat Ksafim is relevant to Shmitah, not to Yovel. Shiluach Avadim happens on the Yovel, not on the Shmitah. Shmitat Ksafim happens on Shmitah, not on the Yovel. That's the distinction between Shmitah and Yovel. The Gemara over here says, well, since the Kohanim are relevant in Shmitat Ksafim and Shiluach Avadim, therefore they're Shayach by Yovel. Shiluach Avadim, I understand, that's a din in Yovel. Shmitat Ksafim is a din in Shmitah. It's not a din in Yovel. So why does that teach us anything about Yovel? It's not relevant to Yovel. We're trying to find things that are relevant to Kohanim during the Yovel. This is not relevant to them. It's not relevant at all during the Yovel. So Tosafot answers, based on the Gemara in Gittin, Miu, Yesh Lomar, Miktat Shayach, Hashmitat Ksafim, Gavay Yovel, De'ein, Shvit noheg, ele bizman sho yovel noheg. Shmita is only doraita when yovel is doraita. Shmita only has a din doraita when yovel is doraita. If yovel is not doraita, then shmita is also not doraita. So therefore, there is a relevance of shmita ksafim, because shmita ksafim will only be in effect, mi doraita, if the yovel is in effect. So Tosafot says it's a second degree of separation, meaning that there is a derivative impact of Yovel on Shmita Ksafim, and maybe that's why the Gemara brought in Shmita Ksafim in the context of Yovel, even though it's not directly related to the Yovel. Okay, we'll stop over here.